This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm here. Now, welcome to the 205th episode of the Town Hall Academy and the first of the year. Hey, let's start the year strong by hearing about branch growth. Now, many in the industry are contemplating growth, and many are thinking of selling or succession. Hey, if you're thinking, contemplating, or you just made a move to add a branch store, find a huge pocket of wisdom right here from your aftermarket peers. In this episode, they share their growth story with you. I'm with Greg Bunch, Aspen Auto Clinic, Denver, Colorado, and the CEO of Transformers Institute. Austin Miller is here, Tire Star from Wolcott, Indiana, and John Manilis, Auto Care Plus, New Hampshire and Maine. Now, together, this team has 15 branches and growing, and along, they bring you a ton of wisdom from the School of Hard Knocks. Hey, how many shops are enough? Is there a sweet spot? What qualities must a shop owner possess in order to successfully add a shop? Well, what are the challenges? No doubt, this group tells their tale of their initial branch store and the huge learning curve that happened with it and with subsequent stores. Hey, I'm grateful to Shop Marketing Pros and Shopware for sponsoring the Academy. Hey, stop spending time chasing customers. Shopware's leading shop management system is helping shops just like yours generate more profit per ticket with less time on the phone. Break away from your legacy system and implement a completely contactless workflow today. Get started on the web at getshopware.com. Is your marketing company sharing the same vanilla social media posts for you that they do for every other shop? Well, that's not how Shop Marketing Pros does business. Now, they believe each shop is unique with its own story. Contact them today on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. This episode's key talking points are already done for you, and that can make for a great working agenda. Find them on the show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/A205. Hey, did you know that our fun and robust show, Aftermarket Weekly, is now a podcast? Yes, you can listen and catch all the insights from my guest host and experience the virtual shop tour while you are mobile. Listen wherever you get your podcast shows. Search for Aftermarket Weekly. From the Remarkable Results Radio Podcast Studio, this is going to be a really great show. There's been a lot of talk about growth and branches, and it just seems like it's not necessarily the thing to do, but it is sure an option for the future. With me is Greg Bunch, Aspen Auto Clinic, Denver, Colorado, and CEO of Transformers Institute. My friend Greg, hello.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Five stores, by the way. Five. John Manilis, Auto Care Plus, New Hampshire, and the state of Maine. Seven stores. Hello, John.
Hi, Tom.
Austin Miller's with us. Tire Star in Wolcott, Indiana. Three stores. Hello, Austin.
Thank you for having me back.
Great to have you back. Guys, look at, here's the deal. I think I'm successful. I think I want to grow, but I keep thinking in the back of my mind, what's the assessment of my business? What's the assessment of myself in mind, ready to move and go forward? What's the assessment of my people and my team? Are they ready for this? Even if it's a, you got four stores and you want the fifth, are we ready? Are we prepared? So, John, I want to ask and go to you first. Why are we doing this? I was on a call with a bunch of shop owners last night in an unbelievable discussion, and the big why question came up. And I know for you, that's huge.
Was it about ego or money? And the answer to those was no. I don't have a big ego. For me, it was a challenge, actually. For me, it was, I got one store going. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. At some point, you get to a point where you don't feel challenged. And that's what made me want to expand and see, you know, what I was capable of, how I could push myself. That was my why. We also started the business because of, you know, as I've mentioned on your podcast before, is I didn't think the industry was really good at service or treating women fairly. And so we dialed that in on store number one, and I thought, you know, we should spread this as far as we can go here.
So you had a personal reason for your why. Some people, Greg, their why is to amass an opportunity to have a huge multiple at the end of the day. They want to build wealth, but they also know that they're capable of doing it.
Right. I think John hits a really good point, the challenge of it. And, you know, if you study human nature, people are only really happy when they're growing and progressing. And so when somebody gets stagnant, there can be that level of, okay, I've achieved this goal. Now what? I've got one successful store. I'm doing all this. And you get that itching entrepreneurial what's next thing going on in your head, which is probably what got into all of our heads at one time to grow our stores. We also have to look in back and say, hey, there's some systems and processes and things that need to be put in place. We may think we're mentally ready, or we're bored, or we're looking for something more, but then we got to do the work. Going back to your comment there, Carm, private equity is definitely taking a good hard look at our industry. You know, they see it as recession proof. They see that the next 10 years, there's going to be more cars on the road out of warranty and on American roads than ever in U.S. history. They see those same charts. And so there's an interest from big money in our little industry. And so I'm not saying this is for everybody, but there's people definitely working on building their empire, knowing that a strategic buyer, you know, a Pep Boys kind of place is going to want to buy them out because they have market share, or private equity is going to go, hey, these guys are doing really well. If we buy them out and put some money behind the owner and give him a piece of the action, maybe he'll help grow this thing to a much bigger scale. And then they, in turn, can flip it. So, yeah, there's people definitely doing this right now for the monetary gains that are available now that probably 10 years ago were not there.
And some are doing it for their people because they recognize that their people may not necessarily be at the highest income that they want. So if you can grow the place, you can grow responsibilities and income. Austin, you have 3 stores. And guys, tell me if I'm right or wrong. You got 2. Geez, I'm doing all this work. I'm not sure I can afford a district manager yet. So let me add the 3rd store so that I could justify actually building the management team. Is that where you currently are, Austin?
It's kind of halfway in between that. I'm still doing most of the district manager's roles. I do have somebody that could definitely fill that position if I went to store number 4. I would say somewhere between 3 and 4 is where that would happen. 3 can be a little too early, but depending on the size of the stores, it's also big enough that you can afford it. I had somebody that was able to manage the 3rd location, so that made a big difference in, you know, going ahead with that.
Well, for me, it was me and my wife work in the business, so, you know, we're kind of a partnership, if you will. But yeah, going from 2 to 3 made you focus in on your process. Process was definitely lacking for us when we went from 2 to 3 because you can't play zone defense with 2 people. So that's, you know, that forced us to document our process, and that way it was easy to train and teach going into the growth period of our business. So
tell me about the day that you realized that you needed to have processes locked down. And did you get any help to do this? Did you include the team?
Yeah, we did. We, you know, obviously the managers of the 2 stores plus my the original founder of the company that I bought the 1st store from, who's still my operations guy today. You know, we leaned on him, and we tag teamed it that way. Basically, all of us started documenting our day-to-day activities and making SOPs out of that, constantly tweaking them to this day. So,
John, how many stores did you grow that you bought an existing business or that you opened a location on its own?
Actually, I've acquired everything except this, the one I'm sitting in right now, which is the headquarters. We built this one. This was a build-to-suit, big facility with offices for the corporate. And also, we don't own the dirt here. It was we can talk about ways to grow, and people always tell me I don't have any money, but I've done it every which way you can, and you don't need money. You use other people's money. Those other people are completely variables, too. I've done it all kinds of ways. So it's never been my money, I can tell you that.
Greg, what do you tell your clients at Transformers? Other people's money, buy a place, build from scratch, find an empty building, or all of the above?
I was on my coaching calls yesterday with quite a few of my clients, and this question came up. And what my attorney always says, it depends, right? There's never a straight answer. And so each scenario is different geographically, right? like John was talking about, doing a build-a-suit. Why would somebody want to do that? Well, they can have a big, beautiful facility. They don't have to come up with all the money to build a $2 or $3 million facility. Now, you know, as John probably knows, you're going to pay it back in a lease, probably a 10 to 15 year lease payment. But it could be truly the way to get into a high income, great demographic without having to come up with, you know, $500,000 down payment on your own. And so sometimes a build-a-suit is good. I lean towards, personally, and with my clients, I lean towards acquisitions if they're available. You know, we've seen what's happened with COVID, that it's really shaken the trees and bushes. And in fact, talked to a client yesterday that has four opportunities put before him, three of them being existing shops, one being a building that got vacated. When there's equipment and there's a database, you know, something to work with, then that's something to look at. But we also find clients that, hey, you know, they want to be in that new growing area and there's literally no acquisitions available, then they've got to look at the build-a-suit, renovate a building, or, you know, the most expensive is to build your own building. And that's, some people have that principle. We've got a couple clients that say, you know what, I'm not going to grow unless I can own the dirt and own the building. And we work around that. You're not going to be able to grow as fast unless you got a rich uncle. But it is a way that people look at it.
And that's exactly true. I mean, I honestly own the dirt at five of the seven stores. And it's a matter of, in the beginning, I wanted to own all the dirt. And I'm still probably going to approach the builder on this property at some point and buy it from him. But a lot of times, you know, you can't grow where you want to grow without taking the opportunity and working with it. And I've bought out, you know, a technician who owned the business, who didn't own the dirt. The dirt was owned by somebody else. I told him I won't buy his business unless I can buy the dirt with it. So I had to make a deal. And the owner of the property, older guy, retired, was a former 20 group member who owned the shop before he sold it to his technician. I bought them both out, basically, and he financed the whole deal. I put no dollars down. He didn't want the capital gains for the, you know, for whatever reasons. And for me, I didn't have to put any money down. I had to renovate the building. I told him, I'm not buying this building unless I can renovate it. So,
you know, guys, you're talking about the creativity of doing a deal. You can't be afraid of that. I think that's the message. However, Greg, don't you need some working capital, trained staff? Like we said, all the processes documented, a marketing plan. I don't think you could just do this thing because somebody's willing to hold paper.
Right. No, all the pieces of the puzzle should be in place. But I bet if we dug into Austin's second store and John's second store, I bet we didn't have, or my second store, we didn't have all that lined up.
Wait a minute. I have to tell you something. When Greg and I did a podcast in the early days, Greg, a few years back, you said, oh, Jesus, I made so many damn mistakes. He was so transparent about, you know, what you learned and where you are today.
Not mistakes, they're learning experiences. I mean,
like John had said, my second store was an acquisition and it was a failing store, literally a week away from bankruptcy. What they didn't know is I had just been embezzled and worked on recovering from that. So even though I had a successful business, I had very little money in the bank. And so it was an owner carry. I put $5,000 down and, you know, had an existing business. And of course, I found out why it was a failing business once I got in there, but still no regrets. But I would never tell anybody. I did not have everything documented. I didn't have a bunch of operating capital. I didn't have a lot of things that I would tell somebody to do it, if they're going to do it right, to do it. But it was a great learning experience. Statistically, more businesses go out of business because of lack of cash than they do for lack of profit. And so, you know, I talk to shop owners that go in and they want to pay cash for everything. They'll run their tank pretty empty and then find themselves in trouble. I'm a believer, like what John said, even if you have the money, it's best to leverage other people's money to make something like that happen. And it could be an owner carry, it could be bank, it could be SBA.
Yeah, I've done it with home equities, I've done it with line of credit, I've done it. But again, it's, you know, money's cheap and it has been cheap for a long time. And if I can go in and cash flow on day one, that's what I'm looking for. And I'm buying the asset if I can. But certainly, I don't buy anything anymore that doesn't pay me back.
I agree with that. Austin, did you, what was your stores? Did you buy an existing store or did you start the first one?
The first store was a startup and I began by renting a building, but then I was able to buy the dirt and expand to a larger building. The second and third stores I bought were both existing. One was still operating. One had gone bankrupt and was shut down for about a month in between me buying it and, you know, being able to start it back up again. But the second and third stores I did buy the dirt as well.
One thing, Carm, that I don't know if we've talked about on the podcast here before, especially with what COVID has done to our industry for a lot of folks, is doing what I call an absorption. If you're buying out a shop, maybe you get an employee or two, you get a database, you get a phone number, you get some equipment, but you're not taking on their physical location. You're actually merging their business into one of your existing locations. So it is another way of expanding if you have room within your own shop to, you know, maybe the guy up the street that's 3/4 mile away wants out. I've probably done 3 or 4 of those, and you got to be careful. You got to know that their business model and your business model are going to line up. I know one of them I did, you know, his labor rate was probably $35 an hour less than mine. And so it was sticker shock when his clients came in. You know, when we do full inspections, we tell people what they need. We have a good warranty. And it was more of a shop that, hey, I'm going to do this for a great price. I'm only going to fix what you brought it in for so I don't offend you. The two business models didn't line up. So we didn't capture all of the people that he brought over. And that was a learning experience as well.
But Greg, that shouldn't be a reason not to do a deal if you believe your team is strong enough to convert. And maybe part of the business plan is that I'll convert X amount of the volume.
Correct. Yeah, you just need to know ahead of time and be prepared for that. And that's what we didn't do when I did that one, is we were not prepared for the business model differences when those folks came in.
What did you lose? I mean, did you lose money or did you just lose the expected sales?
We lost some people because they didn't want to be part of our business model. I remember one guy took me out the parking lot, not to fight me, but just to explain. He goes, "Greg, I see what you're doing. I see the difference between the shop. Yes, you guys have a great warranty. You know, you guys have a much nicer waiting room. You got friendlier people and all that." He goes, "But bottom line, you know, we're a young family and I drive junk cars, and I probably, none of the cars I have is even going to last 3 years or 36,000 miles. And I need somebody, I've got to find somebody that's going to do it for a much lower price." And so it was a respectful conversation that he said, "You know, I understand your model. I don't fit your customer base."
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. I found that a lot. I'm sorry, guys, but if you're going to grow and you're going to acquire the way I did, yeah, I didn't end up with anybody. I mean, one or two are still with me from all my acquisitions. Honestly, they're just not at the level that we run our shops at. And it goes both ways. I bought out an old dealership, and you know, a 14 bay facility doesn't fit my business model either. And I've scaled it way back down to where I'm comfortable running with X amount of technicians and X amount of bays. If it doesn't fit your model and the way you operate day to day, it's not going to change in a new location. And so for me, you know, the 4 bay shop, you know, doesn't really fit the model, and the 12 bay shop doesn't fit the model. And the amount of people that you run at each location seems to always come down to your process. And, so yeah, I mean, I anticipate losing 10% of the customer base and anticipate losing 90% of the staff. That's my finding anyway.
When I'm coaching somebody through an acquisition, just like we do for marketing, right? We want to build an avatar. We want our perfect customer to look like. I also work with them to build the avatar what their perfect shop looks like. So like John said, I've got people that, hey, they want 3 or 4 bay shops. They want them lean and mean. Other people want garage mahals. Other people, you know, want the perfect 7-8 bay shop. So what is it that you want? Does it need to be on a main street? Are you okay if it's on a back street? Is it a Euro shop to add to, you know, because you already have Euro shops and you want more Euro shops? So do you want a general repair? Do you want an Asian specialty shop? You know, for those of us that are married, you know, we probably had some idea in our mind of what the perfect woman would look like. When the right one did come along, you know, it was probably a 70% fit. Everything wasn't just perfect, but you're willing to work with and what compromise on, and what are the core values that absolutely I'm not doing this deal unless these things are in place.
Austin, would you mind sharing with us your why?
For me, I enjoy the challenge. I've always enjoyed, you know, that vehicle that nobody can figure out, or that, you know, the problem child that's been to 3 or 4 shops, and that kind of plays into, you know, expanding. Like, after store one was up and running good, I felt like I was kind of bored, more or less, which my wife always says is dangerous when I get bored. But I enjoyed the challenge. Looking back, I mean, there's a ton of things I would have changed, but sometimes you aren't going to have all the answers, and you make that calculated decision that that's right for you and move ahead. But for me, I would say it's mainly the challenge of being able to take something that's not operating very well and trying to get it profitable, get it operating well, and having a team of employees that's well compensated and loves their job.
Hey, Carm here, and coming up, some great advice on what to ask yourself before you add your next branch. Hey, today's pandemic is causing so much stress and uncertainty for everyone right now, especially shop owners. Now, how do I make sure that my staff and my customers stay protected while still moving cars through the bays? Contactless service is our new normal, and having a shop management system that not only supports this, but actually helps your business thrive through it all is key. Shopware's digital workflow with remote pay will provide that solution for you. Amy Matinet from Auto Craftsman recently commented on social media, and I quote, "I can't even express how grateful I am that I jumped on board with Shopware on January 1st. Would have never guessed that I would be the only one writing service at my shop, as I haven't worked in the shop for the last 15 years. But she goes on and says, I'm running my shop nonstop every day with Shopware to help me not only get the job done easier and faster, but am totally wowing my customers." End quote. Hey, if you want to wow your customers too, request a demo at getshopware.com. Hey, Carm here. Have you heard this before? If you need something, we're just a phone call away. But then when you need something and you make that phone call, nothing. Well, if you needed something from your marketing company right now, today, could you get their help? Or now that they've got your money, has the personalized attention just faded away? Well, we've all experienced something like this. If you want that to go away, I want to introduce you to my friends over at Shop Marketing Pros. Shop Marketing Pros is a boutique marketing company. Now, what that means is they're small. It also means that they know their clients because they communicate with them regularly. If you're tired of working with a big transactional agency who treats you just like another auto repair shop, well, it's time to talk to the folks over at Shop Marketing Pros. They are a real phone call away. Find them on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. The thing that I think about a lot is, here I'm a single shop owner, Greg, John, I pick up the phone, I know you guys, and I say, I've got the itch to grow. What would you tell me? First thing you ask me?
Well, I would ask the why question and then go from there.
And what do you want to hear? I mean, what do you want to hear? You know me, but you don't know me too well. And I say, well, because I'm bored.
Well, that's normal. That's a normal human thing. But passion, it has to be in there. And I honestly, if I hear it's all about money, then it's going to be a long conversation, because it isn't all about money. If it's about growth and it's for the sake of growing, that could be a mistake. It's a long road. It's a journey. And yeah, at the end of the tunnel, I think everybody wants to sell their business or is setting it up to sell. But
so, Greg, I say to you, hey, listen, I want to take my leadership skills to the next level. I've got great people. We're close to having our processes down. Actually, I was thinking of taking one day a week off and working from home, and maybe I could invest that in growing my business. I mean, I think there's other fish to fry. People are calling me all the time. This is, you know, with COVID, I may want to get out, like you mentioned. Or maybe my better question is, are there going to be huge opportunities on the horizon? Maybe that's why we're doing this show, to set people up for the future.
Yeah, like I said in the beginning, the reason big people, you know, private equity, strategic buyers, and what I mean by strategic buyers, companies that have 800, 900, 1200 shops already, they know the potential that this industry has in over the next 10 years. That's why we're getting looked at the way we are. Austin and John, I bet they've both gotten the letters and the phone calls from these bigger fish looking to take the market share that they've put their blood, sweat, and tears into building. So yes, there is going to be a tremendous opportunity over the next 10 years, but I think we all can share and know that it's also going to be filled with challenges, right? That the technician shortage is not going away. Technology is going to continue to advance. We're going to have, you know, the ADAS adjustments. We're going to have self-driving cars. We're going to have hybrids and electrics. The industry is absolutely going to change. And for those that are ready for that challenge, that's going to be there, and ready for the opportunity, I think the opportunity is going to be like it's never been before. But I unfortunately think that the small mom and pop shop with two or three people, they're just not going to have the capital to be able to invest in the location, in the marketing, in the equipment, in the training, and the things that they're going to need to be prosperous in the future. And so that's one of the reasons that I see people call and say, hey, I want to grow, because I want to be able to leverage having a larger company and be able to afford to do those things that I know that are going to be needed to survive and thrive in the future.
And yeah, if they're young and energetic, or even if they're just energetic, you don't have to be young. I honestly think it's, like Greg says, it's a great time to be in this business. It's always been a recession-proof business. But yeah, there's big fish I've talked to that I've had friends sell their 9-location unit to basically a private equity like this. So I'm familiar with the whole process. And yes, we could set up for that. Those are definitely opportunities or a good reason to want to grow so that you can get to X amount of $1 million a year that interest these private equity firms. So
what you're saying, Greg, is that the private equity, you're not surprised that John would either know of or have heard of or has been contacted before, because it's what's going on today. So if you're going to expand into the multi-store operation, thank you for telling us all it's not easy, guys. The word is cautious. If I'm watching this for the first time, and we've done other shows on growth, you know, Greg, you've been on a bunch of those. And as we've talked about the industry consolidating, which is really what this is really about, consolidation. Greg, is this like the biggest trend that's going on, not only for growth, but people that want to buy each other?
No. You know, in the world that I'm in, I can get myopic and think that it is, but you know, we recently, you guys all probably saw the ASA study that came out, you know, that 91% of shops really took a hit during the year of COVID. And so I would say it's a select group that have a different mentality about business that are looking at this as an opportunity. A lot of people are still kind of in survival mode. They're still working on their systems and processes and learning how to run a profitable business. I still think that's the majority of the industry. And then, of course, you've got the people that, you know, I shared this before, you know, 2015 study that by 2020, 54% of mom and pop shops wanted to be out of the business. And of course, they didn't know COVID was coming in 2020. But I think, you know, for those of us old enough to remember, I think it was on Star Trek, you know, they hit the warp speed button and I was on Star Wars and all the stars fly by really fast. I think 2020 has done that to our industry. And I think we're going to see the fallout of that over the next couple of years, where people that were doing okay aren't going to be doing okay, and they don't have the skills to recover from that. I think those are the ones that you're going to see. You know, you're going to go on a Craigslist and see, you know, an auction for shop equipment, or you're going to see them, you know, listing their businesses with a business broker and trying to hang on until they can sell something.
Yeah, I see a lot of opportunity, not just because of COVID, but that's certainly going to kick those baby boomers who were getting ready to retire or sell anyway. Now some of them don't have that exit strategy in place, and now they're being forced to just basically give up their life's work. You know, people like us are going to be there for that opportunity because we're set up to be there. But those opportunities are coming. So,
in industry stuff, we talked about this, you know, meeting Austin and John, not really knowing them. I'm going to guess these guys are not predatory. When we say take advantage of an opportunity, that, you know, the take advantage has a negative connotation of being predatory. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making a fair win-win deal for where they're really at, right? I'm not saying to overpay for something. You know, if we do an acquisition and a guy's 65, 70 years old looking to retire, he wants to know that his shop is going into good hands, and that, hey, if Joe's Auto is going to join the Auto Care Plus family, I know that they're going into good hands. So we got to keep that in mind as we're talking to shop owners looking to get out, that, hey, we're going to keep the legacy that you've built is going to continue with how we do business.
And that's been a big issue with everybody we've acquired. I mean, because again, they spent their whole life building this up, and they didn't want to hand their customers over to just anybody. And so that, you know, that marriage or that relationship and that transition period, I mean, it's just as important to me as the acquirer as it is to the seller. And it, you know, I want that introduction to their customers. I want that letter of recommendation and that transition or that handoff. It's part of the deal.
You know, John, you said earlier that be prepared to lose 90% of your people in an acquisition. But you also, you guys both said that the current owner who's selling wants that confidence that their people will have an opportunity. Is that a dichotomy?
Well, no, I mean, for me, I mean, a lot of times they were with them for 20 years or whatever, the whole time. And you know, they too are humans and see it as an opportunity to maybe get out and try something different. And because they've been so loyal to the old owner that, you know, this, they see this is not that they don't like me, because that's not the case. They just say, you know, this is my time to see what I can do and not let my old boss down, because, you know, they were so dedicated and loyal to him. So that's happened to me. Stranger things have happened, but certainly people just don't like change. And even, I've gone in and waited 6 months to make a change. I've gone in and people were literally being stolen from by their owner. He wasn't paying their health insurance bills, yet they were still loyal to him. And they looked at me as like, I'm some kind of a criminal coming in. It's amazing what I've seen. And so anyway, it's all variable, really. But
Austin said it, like, he likes fixer-upper shops, right? And if you're going to do a fixer-upper shop, there's usually, we say this to Transformers all the time, you don't have a broken shop, you have a broken manager. If you're inheriting a shop that's broken, it's probably because the people. And if they've been in a broken system too long, we may not be the ones to be able to fix them, and therefore you're going to have that turnover. I've had other clients acquire shops, and never have I seen one that has retained 100% of the people in 12 months. Never have I seen that. But I have clients that have retained 70 to 80% of the staff and done it very successful. But again, those weren't the fixer-upper shops. Those were the shops that were that had a pretty solid foundation. And so it wasn't this dramatic change when the new owner came in.
On the beginning of the show, I said assessment of business, assessment of self, assessment of team. The advice that you would give to an individual on assessment of the business, are you looking for a strong, profitable company? I mean, is it steeped in the numbers and the culture?
I'm a numbers guy, so numbers don't lie. People lie. That's how I approach it. And I look at the silver linings. I look at the car counts that they're running. Certainly a big part of what I learned about growing was looking at the number of rooftops per competitor. And that's a very important piece. And of course, the location is a big part of it. I would never advise a person to buy their second store that wasn't going to be better than their first store. And because I did that and it didn't turn out the way I wanted. Learning from that, you definitely want to make sure that the numbers are there or the opportunities are there. That's strictly a function of how many people live around the shop or work around the shop. And then you know with your business model what you're going to be able to get from those amounts of cars per month that you see. And because you know that the shop's not marketing, most likely, and you're going to go in there with a marketing plan that in the area has never seen before. So
Greg, I want to grow. I'm a shop owner. You know, guys, just chime in on this. I'm not necessarily asking this just of Greg, but I'm a shop owner. Just think an avatar of a typical shop owner. And I pick up the phone and I say to any one of you, I'm ready to grow and I've done a self-assessment. I'm prepared. Does my business in your mind have to be wildly profitable in order to risk what I'm about ready to do?
Certainly helpful.
Yeah. I would think it has to be, or if you're not profitable at your first business, you really don't have any business expanding. Your focus needs to be on doing one thing right before you try and do two things wrong.
Profitability is important, Carm, but is it profitable without you being in the day-to-day operations? I'm not saying that you're not involved in accounting and marketing and the strategic side of things of the business, but I'm talking about, you know, if you're not writing service, you're not greeting customers, you're not diagnosing the tough cars, you're out of that role and it's profitable. That's important because a lot of shops are profitable, but it's because the owner has his hands in the cookie jar every single day with clients or with the or cars or both.
And that's exactly what I look at as well, Carm, is that how much involvement is that owner in this business and how much of this is going to be impacted when I purchase it? Because I'm not going to be involved like that.
This is what I find so fascinating as I think about what you guys have been saying. John, you're looking at a place and your rules are just what you said. Is the owner involved? And Greg, if I came to you and says, hey, I'm a single store operator and I'm ready to grow, you'd be looking at me the same way John would be looking at buying a business. You'd say, well, Carm, if you're ready to expand, what are you looking at in this next business? Write it down. Can you check the box? Are you doing all of that? And if you're not, you've got no reason to grow.
I'm not a technician. I didn't come from owning a or turning a wrench and wanted to fix every broken car. Yeah, I have a lot of knowledge about cars, and I have I'm pretty knowledgeable about how to fix them, but that's not what I do on a day-to-day basis, and it's never what I did on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, learning about business is a whole different thing, no matter if you're a technician or an engineer, or it doesn't matter what you are. Going from a salon, you know, person who cuts hair to owning the salon, whole different world. So
you were talking about the different, you know, do you want to buy a shop that's already profitable, or do you want to buy a fixer-upper? And again, the question, that the answer to that is always, it depends. If I'm an investor and I'm going to go buy a coffee shop, you know, I know how to use my Keurig machine. I don't think I've ever actually ground my own beans. So I don't know anything about the coffee business. The only reason I'd buy the business is as an investment. I've got my 401k and, you know, I don't want to be in the market. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to own my own business. I would have to rely on the profitability, the numbers, the systems and processes of this coffee shop that I'm buying. And you know, I'm not going to go in there planning on learning how to make coffee. So that's one way of approaching it. If I'm going to buy it, I'm not going to buy a fixer-upper coffee shop. I'll probably even buy a franchise because they're even more dialed in. What happens with shop owners is we look at it as a project, right? Hey, I'm going to buy this cool project car, aka a broken shop, and not understanding what it's going to cost, right? Who's ever built a project car that didn't go over budget, take more time than before? And if that's the way you want to approach it, that's fine. But you can't have an investor hat on and a technician hat on at the same time. They're not going to work. You know, there's some companies out there, they're big enough, they have an acquisition team. They know how to go in and fix a broken shop, but they're built for that model. It's a couple different ways of approaching it. And I have clients that approach it in different ways. Some are looking for fixer-uppers because that's what they like doing, and they have the staff to keep their existing stuff going while they go in and do that. Other ones are like, you know, I'll write the check, but I'm not doing the work. I'm going to buy something. I'll pay more for it because I don't want to have to go in and fix something up. I want something that's already running smoothly and profitable.
Austin, is your next store number 4, going to be a fix-me-upper?
I'm not sure about that. Probably the short-term outlook is to improve what I have. And I got into the towing and recovery space with one location, and that's been something to learn. So that's kind of getting the focus right now. But I've had good success with fixer-uppers. We're in a kind of a rural area, so they're usually pretty reasonable, and I can buy the real estate and, you know, the customer list and the employees, you know, the whole package for way less than what Greg can buy, you know, probably just the business for, because of our area. So in my area, fixer-uppers do work well. I guess I don't feel pressured to go get store number 4 right now. I feel like I'm just going to continue to improve what I have. You're always looking. If the perfect opportunity comes along, you definitely would want to capitalize on it, but don't ever feel like you have to start another store just to keep up with. I mean, there's always going to be another shop owner that owns more stores than you. Don't let your ego get in the way of common sense.
Austin, I'll play Carm here for a minute. I got a question for you. If we could put you in a time machine and go back, and you know, you said you added towing and recovery to your business, would you still have done that, or would you have taken that energy and gone to a 4 store if you could go back in a time machine?
I'd probably keep that. I really, really enjoyed the challenge of that, and it's exciting to me, and I would probably continue that. With the 3 stores we have, it covers about a 30-mile radius, and it works really, really well as an advertising piece for our stores, because you pull somebody off of the interstate, they're looking for a shop that can fix their car. And we've seen 10% increases all across the board because now we're the ones going out with, you know, hey, you know, if you need your car repaired, we know a good shop. And so that's one reason that I would keep that.
Gotcha.
All kinds of ways to make it work. But I would tell you, my 8th location fell through because it had a towing recovery and an auto body shop. And honestly, I was up to the challenge, Austin. But you know what? My board of directors, meaning my wife and a couple of my near and dear employees, just talked me out of it. And said, we got to stay in our lane. This is not what we know how to do. And this is too far away for us to learn.
And I would definitely say it's not right for everybody. It is a challenge. It's hard work. The phone, you know, rings 24 hours a day. But for me, it has worked out.
I love the esprit de corps, the youth that Austin brings to our industry. I've never been so energized. I'm doing some podcasts coming up with some millennials, you know, shop owners. like you, Austin, and it's exciting to me to see some of the strategies and the great attitudes that are coming out of our youth and our industry, and how what great opportunities that they have, Greg. And by the way, Greg, you can come on and be my guest host anytime. I love, thank you for asking those great questions. Let me go to the comments. And there was one about, here's from Todd Westerlin. How many shops are too many shops? Do they find there's a sweet spot?
It depends on the business model that you run, right? The reason that some of these big tire shops have 1,200 locations is they run what I would call the quote unquote discount model. And I know that's, it's pretty generic. But, you know, they're doing tires, shocks, struts, brakes, fluid flushes. They're not getting into, like what Austin said, they're not the shop that people are going to take their crazy car that's been to three different shops and they can't fix. They're going to go to a relationship shop, which is more what your audience is about, is, you know, our shops were built on relationship. And it is truly a tougher model to run where you have that deeper relationship, you have higher value, you've got better technicians, you're doing more in-depth work. And so this question does come up of how many of those kind of shops can you have versus the discount model, you know, the Firestone kind of model, the Brakes Plus kind of model. Again, I hate to sound like my attorney. It depends. Guys, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it depends too, because for me, I can't tell you I'm in a sweet spot or not. And I can't tell you that I don't need to grow at this point, but I still want to. And do I know if 10 is going to be the magic number? I don't. I don't think there's a magic number, honestly. I look at opportunities and the challenge again. So the more successful you are in you know, financially, the more you can expand and you can do better at your current locations. You can offer your people more. It just opens up all kinds of opportunities. We always take the money and invest it back into the business. And it's not like we're making more money. We're just investing it more.
Great point. And you can leverage what you currently have because you've got equity in the business and I'm sure some great credit lines with your bank. Will the biggest challenge, John, to grow to 15 will be the development of your people?
Well, as we alluded to, we know all too well, it's really people. It's the technician shortage. It's, you know, this is what keeps us up at night. It's like, how are we going to, you know, we can run a business, but we can't run a business if we can't fix the cars. And no matter how much leverage you have, that problem isn't getting better. And I think we as an industry need to do a better job of, I think COVID is a perfect opportunity for us to enlighten the parents out there about the college scam that it is. And believe me, I'm college educated. I got a bachelor of science degree in electrical engineering. I'm not downplaying education, but the ROI isn't there, guys. And people can make a lot of a decent living, a really good living actually, with their hands.
That's the future, guys. Building apprentice programs inside of your business. That's my soapbox for 2021. I just want you to know that. Hey, Dwayne Myers, a great friend of the show. I know Greg of yours. There's a lot to prepare for going multiple locations. I think they're up to 5 or 6 now out in Maryland. And thanks for hanging with us, Dwayne. Look, at guys, I want to summarize this, but I want you to each have a chance to tell me what I need to prepare for to grow my next store. So as our audience is listening, and in the future, people are going to pick up the phone and say, hey, Carm, I'm thinking of growing to another branch. Do you have any episodes that I could listen to somebody fix me, set me straight, talk me in or out of it? I'm a guy, I got one store, I'm ready to go. Let's, Austin, I'm going to go to you, Greg, and then John. Okay. So Austin, talk to me.
For me, looking back, I'm still young. I started in 2011, but it was 2017 till I actively got involved in a 20 group in Ratchet and Wrench and like actively getting involved with other, you know, shop owners. And I've learned so much. I would say to somebody that's looking to grow, if you aren't involved in a 20 group, if you're not attending conferences, and just sit at the lunch table, and you don't have to tell everybody about your store, but ask people, you know, like, what do you have going on? What works well for you? And you would be amazed at how much you can learn. And that will really, really help you when you go to expand, because there's so much knowledge in our industry. And if you take the time to, you know, be curious about what's happening in other people's lives, you can learn a lot.
Thank you for that. I wrote down being a perpetual student. I wrote down networking. And I also wrote down that we have almost 900 episodes in our content library of episodes that, you know, you've all done together and that we've covered so many issues and things regarding business acumen and strategy and leadership, et cetera, et cetera. So don't hesitate to delve into what we have available for you. Greg, tell me why I should, what I need to think about. Tell me I'm crazy to want to add my next branch.
No, you're not going to get crazy here. You're going to get excited. So shameless plug, right? I'd tell you to call me at Transformers because this is what we do. You know, we're one of the only companies out there that actually help people with their journey into multiple stores. And so I appreciate letting me plug there. And Austin hit it on the nail on the head, right? The longer you wait to get help, the more painful, the more expensive it's going to be. In all honesty, whether it's me or there's other people out there that are talented as well to help you on that, it's not something you should just jump in the deep end and go alone. You know, get help from people that have been there, done that. They got this. They got the trophy, but they got the scars to prove it. Just like you said in the beginning, Karma, I'm going to find out what their motivations are, what their whys are. You know, like John said, if it's all about making money, okay, why? Why do we want to make that money? Is it about, you know, you have a charity that you want to get back to? Is it because you want to have the biggest house on the lake? I just find when somebody's so focused on it's just all about the money that they need to have the passion for the industry. They need to have the passion for people. They need to have passion for changing the industry. If it's all about the money, it's probably not a good fit. And it's probably honestly not, it's certainly not the best reason to do what we're talking about doing. Like John said, you're going to spend a lot of years reinvesting your profits back in to build this empire. The other thing that I want to say, and it ties back to what Austin said too, and we say this all the time at Transformers, information is not transformation. And so you have to have a mentality that you're going to be a person of massive action. If it's all just about collecting information and not somebody that knows how to put that to work, you're going to have issues. So you've got to be willing to put in the time, the energy, and get out of your comfort zone. Something I'll be teaching on next weekend, and be willing to do things that you've never done before and delegate things that you're really good at to people that you may not feel will do it as well as you. If you can't delegate, then you're going to drive yourself crazy or put yourself in an early grave.
You guys are all saying it. And let me just say it one more time, get help. Don't try to do it alone. There's so much wisdom out there to learn from. Hey, John, I'll let you sum it up. And thanks so much for being here, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. And yeah, it was a great to be part of the great minds that are on here. I'll echo a lot of it. I mean, what I wrote down here is mentor is my number one. So that's exactly what we've been talking about. So get out and find people who have been there, done that, and find more than one. But, you know, guys like us are willing to help. We're willing to give advice. It's free for me. It's worth what you pay for, maybe. But but honestly, the second one I have on there is wife and our significant other. For me, that was when we first learned how to go out and grow. We went out to industry events and we went to a seminar, basically, all about growth and from a mentor, if you will. And his advice or his comment was that of all the people that are here today, and there were hundreds and hundreds of them, he says, you guys are actually going to go do something. He says, 99% of the guys in here are going to go home and not do anything. Why are you guys going to do something? Because you're both here. You can't go home to your wife and explain the excitement that you had. Even if your wife's not in the business with you guys, you need to have her support or it's not going to work. And for me, I'm speaking from my own experience. So if you don't have buy-in from the house, it's going to be an uphill battle. And then, you know, from there, I went to, you know, having a right-hand man. I had a couple, you know, guys that know how to run a shop just like you do. And if you've got a tech or a GM or a store manager or any of those types of guys who see the value in growing, they're going to be paramount to have with you because you can't be everywhere.
Right.
And then, you know, and then it goes into the nitty gritty of location and the actual business opportunity. But until you cover those first two or three, it's going to be an uphill battle. So
I have to tell you, I think he nailed the wife thing. And so let me give you some advice on that. If the wife isn't involved in the business, and I know John, yours is. Austin is yours?
Yes, she is.
And Greg, no, right?
She worked for a lot of years in the business. She was in the accounting department. She was in customer service. So now she helps more on the transformer side than she does on the Aspen side.
It's still to John's point, and I think it's so poignant to try to explain someone who is zero involved that you want to spend money and take a risk and, you know, work more hours and grow your empire. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's a battle. If the strategy is to grow and that's your plan and your wife's not involved, start discussing it. Start getting her, bring some stories home, right?
Behind every good guy is an incredible woman, I got to tell you. So,
right.
Because, hey, my wife and I were both engineers and we gave up our careers. She gave up her career because she knew how much I wanted to start a business. And, she was all in. So
Henry Ford attributes two things to his wild success, right? He was the richest man in America at a time. Number one was his mastermind group. And number two was his wife. Or vice versa. But that's what Henry Ford said, the two top things that made him the success that he was.
I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for Saint Anne.
Definitely saint, right?
Yeah, I know. Honest to God, you're right. Hey, guys, thanks so much. Have a great 2021. Appreciate you being here.
Anytime, Carl. Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.